Hi, and welcome to the inaugural episode of the Unlikely Gifts podcast. I'm your host, Diane M. Sabard, and I'm here with my sidekick, Larry King. And yes, Larry King is his actual name.
Yeah, well, that was my name. You know, my parents gave it to me. I have to live with it. I've been in radio and television most of my life, but yet I've gone by other names. But finally, I'm back to my real name. So, you know, I used to have radio names like Jack Kennedy and Bill Swartz and things like that. Now my name is Larry King. So here we are. We're on the Unlikely Gifts podcast.
Well, Larry and I have joined forces to share humorous, entertaining, and inspirational stories from our most memorable life experiences. You know, those experiences we call unlikely gifts. This podcast is just one of my avenues for storytelling, as I'm also an author and a blogger. You can find out more about me, my book titled The Unlikely Gift of Breast Cancer, and sign up for my free monthly blog and newsletter at my website, dianemsamard.com.
I always wanted to know, does it hurt to be a blogger?
No, not at all.
No?
No.
Blogger is easy? Okay.
Blogging is easy. Super easy. As long as you have lots of stories, it's super easy. Well, speaking of stories, Larry, you're also a storyteller with a podcast of your own. Why don't you share a bit about that?
Well, you know, I think it's important to go through life and tell people stories because it's important. It makes an impact on them. They may have an issue in their life that they could relate to. And so if they're hearing it from the first person, it might be a good thing to hear about, because sharing your wisdom is what podcasts can be all about.
I agree. That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
So before we start today's story, Diane, tell us a little more of your background.
Well, since you asked, get this. I grew up in a town of only 80 people, 80 people.
Wow.
Called Coatesfield in central Nebraska. And then after completing my journalism degree, I went to work in corporate America, where I was focused on business writing. And then about 25 years ago, I moved to Colorado, where I eventually dabbled in angel investing and learned many expensive and profitable lessons. But then I was thrown a curveball, diagnosed with a bout of late stage 3 breast cancer in 2015 that was barely detectable. And ultimately, the lack of attention paid to what I call the emotional scars of cancer prompted me to become the founder of a specialty at the University of Denver called the Center for Oncology Psychology Excellence, or COPE, to bring attention to the long-term psychological trauma that cancer often causes. And so today, I'm a psycho-oncology influencer, a blogger, as we mentioned, a patient advisor, a business mentor and coach, an award-winning author, and a motivational speaker. And the theme in all I do is unlikely gifts, because I believe there's an unlikely gift in every circumstance.
Boy, I agree. I like the fact that you're bringing up unlikely gifts, and we're going to be talking about, I think, several of those as we go along. The fact that you grew up in a town with only 80 people in Nebraska? Seriously?
Yeah, it's true. It's all true. And that little town still exists today. It's a lot smaller even than when I grew up. And it was very, as I always say, Norman Rockwell-esque. And everybody knew everybody else's business. And we had what we needed to get by. And of course, that's in the heart of corn and cattle country. And so lots of farmers and ag-based businesses around. Life evolved around the weather and farm chores. And it just was a very different way of life.
So you grew up on a farm?
I grew up in the city.
Of 80 people.
I actually got teased in elementary school about being a city girl. And I pleaded with my father, can we please move to the country? Because I hate being bullied about living in the city.
So in my definition of 80 people, that means if there were like 3.4 people in a house, that must have meant you had like 20 houses in the whole town, in your whole city.
Yeah, and a lot of these small towns, of course, emerged across America pre-World War, and Coatesfield was actually founded, I want to say, in the late 1800s.
Were you on the railroad?
Yeah, of course. And there was a big river that flowed by as well.
Was the grain bin there as well?
Yeah, the big, huge, tall elevator. It's no longer there. But yeah, it's all based around agriculture. Everything that, you know, these small towns across America. And so back when farms were much smaller, today they're so big that they're so efficiently farmed that a lot of the population numbers in these areas have gone down tremendously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But back in the day, we were at the tail end. The Coatesfields heyday, is so I'm told, was before World War II. Mm. And it actually had a much higher population. And then as generations moved away and went off to war.
The boys went off to war and never came back. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Well, you're going to tell us a story today about one person, right? The first person that influenced you?
Yeah. So, oh my goodness. Today's story is about the first person I ever met who lived life on her own terms.
Mm.
She was bold and adventurous with just enough crazy thrown in to make her perpetually memorable.
Well, who are you talking about?
So I'm talking about my kindergarten teacher, Mrs. Nettie Fernley, who was born in, 1895.
Whoa, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, seriously. When I started kindergarten in 1970, I was 5 years old and she was 75 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so, still teaching.
Yeah. And she had taught, of course, school her whole life, but she taught for 2 years at my school. We had a little elementary school there in Coatesfield. It was Coatesfield School District number 14.
Now, it was a country school.
You'd call it a country school. It wasn't like one house, little house on the prairie kind of stuff, but it was close to that.
So how many rooms were in it?
So we had three rooms and three classrooms, and we had a kitchen and, of course, restrooms. But we had one teacher, Mrs. Fernley, and she taught all 7 grades.
Oh, yeah, she bounced around the different rooms during the day?
Well, so there were 3 different classrooms, but we were all in one room.
Oh.
So the other classrooms were used for, like, indoor recess because god-awful Nebraska winters, you can't go outside and play.
Uh-huh.
So we were all in one room. So that meant that in kindergarten, I got to hear 6th grade math. And so it was so interesting to hear all the other classes because you're literally trying to do your homework there while other classes are going on.
So was that an advantage, you think?
Yeah, I'm sure it was. But it just wasn't, we didn't have much time for each class because to give a math lesson to all 7 grades.
Yeah.
She's, you know, 5-10 minutes. That's how she did it.
Come on, but, you 5-year-olds, learn this.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, there was, I want to say on average about 15 students in the whole school.
Mm.
And so that meant my kindergarten class there were 3 of us in kindergarten. And so in some classes, one had one student and it just depended, but we all seemed to have cousins who went to the same school.
I have a question because you were 3 of you in kindergarten. When I went to kindergarten, I had a little blanket. I had to lay down and take a nap.
Yeah.
Did you take naps?
Yep. And that was part of the deal.
How did you take naps when the rest of the school was going on?
I know. Now they just put us in another room.
Oh, okay.
You know, lock the doors and no.
Yeah.
But yeah, we kindergartners got to have nap time. That was the best.
Okay.
That was the best. But so anyway, back to Mrs. Fernley. She actually started teaching school when she was 14.
Wow.
That meant she grew up in the early 1900s. And in fact, she not only did she teach school starting at age 14, she actually played piano for the old silent movies. I remember hearing about back in the early days of movies, before there was audio, they had
each theater had a piano player playing to create the emotion of what was going on the screen.
Exactly. And so she did that. And so as a result, she was quite a performer.
She sounds like a very memorable person.
Yeah, she was. She was certainly a prolific piano player, but also a school teacher. And
so,
of course,
at the age 75, what did she look like at this time?
So she was very short. She was less than 5 feet tall. And she just wore this caked on pancake makeup, and she had white hair, so she wore a black wig and bright red lipstick and a lot of eyeshadow. And she would wear knee highs. She would wear dresses, but she would wear knee highs, and just this very colorful character. And as I mentioned, she was always performing. She wore this perfume that reminds me now of what would smell like stale Chanel No. 5 perfume. It's very strong. So you could always smell her coming. And she just was fascinating to me. She scared me. She frightened me. And in fact, a few of the things that I remember about her is we, of course, didn't have a lot of money. And we had a cabinet that was full of special lined paper for writing class. And so she would hand out one sheet of paper every day. And mine always managed to get a drop of her drool on it. And she would lay it on my desk. And then she had this Zahner, it's called a Zahner Bloser pen. And it had red ink on one side and then blue ink on the other side.
Yeah.
And she was, so when she corrected papers, she would flip it around like a drum twirler. Yeah. To the red side. And she would sit there and she'd twirl the pen like a drummer. I mean, you know, kindergartner, I was just so enamored with who she was.
So in your kindergarten, were you the kindergartners up front and the big kids in the back? Is that how it went?
Yeah, she kept us pretty close to her. I remember that. And there was a lot to absorb. And I was just always like I am now, infatuated with people and intrigued by people and always asking questions.
Well, but you said she kind of scared you, but what was she really like?
Yeah, no, she was always smiling and happy and jolly and very generous and loved to talk. And she, as I mentioned, scared because she had such a big personality for such a small person. She dressed so weird, but I was intrigued by her boldness. Mm. And so, for example, we would have music class, which she taught, of course, because we had one teacher for 7 grades. And so that music class consisted of us singing, the whole school singing. And so she'd sit down at the old upright, you know, the brown piano with the ivory keys, and she'd start playing, I don't know, Home on the Range. And so we would sing Home on the Range until we ran out of verses, and then she would transition into like ragtime swing, and she'd start playing like she did in the old silent movies. And we were just, and she just would go on and on and on and on, and she just was such a performer. She was always performing, even at the chalkboard, the way that she wrote cursively on the chalkboard.
Yeah,
it was always, you know, her hands were anyway quite out. But the most memorable experience I remember with her was our Christmas program in 1971. So I would have been in first grade by then. Every December, we'd always have the Christmas program, and all the parents and aunts and uncles and grandmothers and grandparents and cousins would come to our little school and watch. We'd put on plays and give recitations, and some of us that played a musical instrument would give a solo, and then our little 5-piece band would play. But that particular year, after we finished the program, we were having cookies and Kool-Aid probably, and there were little gifts for all of us school kids to open. And so we just opened our gifts. And of course, since we lived in the heart of where a lot of Germans and Polish people and Czech people like me, someone always brought an accordion and they would play polka music.
Mm.
And so Elmer Lett brought his accordion. He was an accordionist and he was playing polkas. And then Mrs. Fernley just got like punch drunk. She got into the moment. And we were all out in this big space where everyone was sitting, and she started doing a jig to the polka music. She was doing her jig around, and we're like, okay, well, that's kind of weird. And then she took her wig off, and she started twirling it around her head, and then she threw it in the audience. And
that's got to scare the kids.
Yeah, and then it got worse. She started taking her clothes off.
What?
So then at that point, women started shrieking, and babies started screaming, and I was just... my mouth was open. I was in awe watching this woman like start to do a burlesque show. And I thought, oh my gosh. So then someone escorted her off and calmed her down.
But I would hope. I would think that you lose her job at that point.
I know. Oh God. It was so hilarious. People were just so shocked. And they're like, she's crazy. So anyway, she was not our teacher the next year, but she was, like I said, this first woman that I met that lived life on her own terms. And so, I was so intrigued by that.
So what prompted you want to tell the story about your kindergarten teacher?
So I had always wanted to share Mrs. Fernley's story on my blog, and which I finally did that a couple of years ago. And as I was doing research on her, I actually, there was a lot of information available on the internet about her. And I found out that, of course, she lived during this century of the 1900s, which was such a transformative century. I mean, so much happened in the last century, and she lived through all of that. She actually was married twice, and her first husband served in World War I. His last name was Fernley, and so he was in the National Guard and was actually a part of the what was called the Rainbow Coalition. And so the Rainbow Coalition was made up of all of these National Guard units from all across the country. And they served as their own, I guess, battalion or, you know, whatever, in trench warfare in World War I. And the concept for the Rainbow Coalition came from, of all people, Douglas MacArthur, who is likely better remembered by most of us as somewhat controversial general from World War II that smoked the corncob pipe and everything.
And he said, "I shall return."
Exactly. But in World War I, he was a major, an army major. And it was his idea to bring this Rainbow Coalition together. So, and I'm such a history buff, and especially about the World Wars. But in her first husband actually survived World War I, but then died when he came home from the war. He died from his war injuries. And she remarried, but she always kept Fernley as her last name because that was her teaching name. And so anyway, she, in 1934, she was named to Ripley's Believe It or Not for having been a school teacher the longest in the whole entire country.
Oh my goodness.
She had started teaching when she was 14. So anyway, that was fascinating, but she lived to the age of 101. And she died. She played piano at, it sounded like, up until she died. And it was just this fascinating, fascinating woman.
So what impact did she have on you? Was it important to you?
Yeah, it really wasn't. And especially now that I'm in middle age and reflecting on my mentors and influencers, of course, in central Nebraska, our town of 80 people was very conservative. And I just had never met anyone like Mrs. Fernley who was so driven to live life on her terms. I thought that was great, even at the young, ripe age of 5. Like I said, she was bold and brave and bizarre, and she was just unforgettable. But yet, she was so impactful. And she was the first person I ever met who really celebrated her differences. You know, she was her own person, and I just had not seen, of course, we didn't know what to think of her at the time, but she was a trailblazer, quite honestly. And she literally helped influence me to become the person that I am today, especially now.
Do you think she was crazy?
Yeah, I don't think so. Some people possibly thought so. She taught school well into her 80s, so she literally taught thousands of school kids all across the Midwest. But to me, she'll always be a memorable influencer and truly an unlikely gift in my life and to the lives of those she touched.
Wow. Thank you very much for this trip back in time to this unlikely gift that you've brought us to. Where can the listeners read more about more of your stories?
Oh, thank you. I would be so honored by that. There's actually a couple of ways. First of all, my monthly blog, which is titled Middle Age Moxie, focuses on my observations of life and the unique lessons I have learned. And then in my monthly newsletter, The Unlikely Gifts Insider, I share information and resources that are available to help those impacted by cancer address their emotional scars. And if you'd like to sign up to receive both of those, just go to my website, dianemsamar.com, to sign up, or you can reach out to me personally through the contact page on my website, and that will send me an email, and I'll help you get signed up.
Didn't you also write a book about your cancer experience?
Yeah, I did. And you can learn even more about me in that memoir style book that I wrote called The Unlikely Gift of Breast Cancer. And it's based on my year with breast cancer. And it's won several awards, and it's available for purchase on my website, which again is Diane M. Simard. Or you can purchase it on Amazon or other major book retailers.
And you've also got the podcast. And as I understand it, we're going to be releasing the podcast one a month to go along with your blogs. Is that correct?
Yep. So they'll likely be released mid-month. And so be happy to regularly follow us and leave your thoughts on or suggestions, feedback about our podcast. You can do that in the review section of wherever our podcast page on wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And we'd like everybody to tell their friends about the Unlikely Gifts podcast as well. And I think that's a wrap for this, our inaugural?
Yes.
I can't say that word. Inaugural?
Yeah. Well, we got through it. That's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
But I would be remiss before we go if I didn't thank you, Larry, for all that you're doing to generously share your production and editing capability to make this podcast possible. And I want to encourage you to be sure to listen to Larry's Sort of Fun Stories podcast, a podcast that he also has about his own stories. And I also highly recommend a free, what's called virtual vacation radio station that you can stream online. And it's called Collage Travel Radio.
May I say it's collagetravelradio.com.
And just type that in and it'll take you there. It's wonderful snippets about travel tips and some great music, and I really enjoy it.
Well, thank you.
Larry's involved with that as well.
Well, life is all about giving back, so you got any final thoughts?
Well, I certainly do. Please remember and reflect on those in your life who encouraged you, who challenged you, who taught you, or who impacted you in a memorable way. Those who are, in essence, your unlikely gifts. Thank you for listening. Please share our link with your friends and join us next time. I'm Diane M. Simard, and this is the Unlikely Gifts Podcast.